There's two aspects. There's carbon emissions, and then there's carbon capture or carbon storage, which is where you implement an activity that will sequester carbon. So that would be something like regenerating a cleared paddock into a forest. So you've got a growth of woody biomass or growth of trees, and they sequester the carbon into the wood.
Oh, so it's not necessarily tech or infrastructure in place. It's actually the planting of biodiversity itself to grab up that carbon.
Yeah, there is technology solutions, but the aspect that Green Collar deals with is the land management aspect. So really looking at change in land management practice to improve carbon sequestration and to offset carbon emissions. A sequestration project would be something along the lines of having a paddock that maybe had previously been cleared for agriculture and allowing that paddock to regenerate into a forest or native vegetation. And the idea of something like planting trees to store carbon is that the trees require carbon to grow. So by planting them to grow, you're taking the carbon from the atmosphere and putting it into the soil around the tree, into the vegetation around the tree, into the tree itself. So removing it from the atmosphere.
Where would all these trees come from?
There's actually nurseries for tree planting. So depending on where you are, there's a lot of indigenous areas, actually. They run indigenous nurseries of native plants to plant on indigenous protected areas. There's also local land care groups that run nurseries. It's quite an expensive process, and sometimes they're subsidized and sometimes it's just philanthropic. And other times there can be participation in a scheme such as the Emissions Reduction Fund, where they get funding to grow the trees and plant the trees and maintain them.
Yeah, I might just add there, it's not just about taking trees from a nursery and planting them onto bare ground. There's often a lot of natural regeneration that can occur. So often there might be remnant trees along roadsides or within the paddocks themselves. And so if you remove the disturbing process, whatever that may be, cropping or grazing or something like that, that actually allows the area of land to regenerate naturally. And so it comes from the landscape itself.
Mm. And in terms of this collaboration, what exactly is happening on behalf of the Centre for Compassionate Conservation? What sort of help are you providing in this collaboration?
We've got all these carbon projects up and running across Australia now. And one of the big questions is, how do we make sure that that carbon actually stays on site? And I don't think it'll be any surprise to anyone to you that in Australia, we have a lot of risks. So, you know, we're a land of drought, we're a land of flood, land of fire. All of these things can affect vegetation. And so then that will affect the amount of carbon that is stored within an area of land. But it also affects the rate of carbon that is being drawn into the land through photosynthesis. So we're really interested in trying to quantify what are some of these risks.
How exactly are you quantifying that?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So if you take away climate change, we actually currently can't answer what is the effect of some of these risks, particularly fire and drought. Long term, how does this affect the vegetation? And how does this affect productivity? The great thing about partnering with Green Collar is that as part of their monitoring program, they collect a lot of data on biomass, which is essentially carbon, and they're going to be collecting that over 25 years.
15 to 25 years.
Yeah.
We do monitor for fire disturbance. We monitor for any clearing disturbance that might occur within project areas, where we really do want to develop a predictive approach about, you know, what future impacts we know exist in the Australian landscape and address the likelihood of a risk having a negative impact on a carbon project. And by negative impact, I mean results in either carbon not being stored at the level that was expected, or it could be another negative impact. Carbon projects go beyond just looking at the carbon storage potential. They also address other co-benefits, I guess, that we would call them. So improved habitat and connectivity for biodiversity, you know, and most importantly, what actions can be taken to prepare or mitigate for those risks.
Yeah, I guess I just want to say one of the interesting things from a research perspective is when we talk about risk, people often think that it's negative. So fire is bad, I guess, be an example, but that's not always the case. It can be a little bit more nuanced than that. So particularly with fire, you know, fire will cause carbon emissions from the fire itself. And also if there's a lot of trees that are killed, those trees will slowly decompose over the following years and they will also release carbon into the atmosphere. When you're talking about Australia, a lot of Australia's vegetation has evolved to cope with fire. And in fact, a lot of vegetation types actually need fire. And so they won't actually regenerate in the absence of fire. So on the one hand, you have this disturbance that can reduce carbon, but if you suppress fire from the landscape for a long enough period of time, then that may actually have negative consequences as well.
So I guess in terms of mitigating those risks, it's not just addressing what we might understand to be a risk, but also understanding those ecosystems.
Yeah, exactly.